Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
All right, so tonight's speaker is Matt Caspari, and I've got the privilege of introducing Matt because I worked for him over the summer. So Matt was a former MBA student here a few years ago, graduated in 2006.
Yep.
And Matt's background is actually in biochemistry. He studied at Georgetown and worked for a few years in mergers and acquisitions and then also pharmaceutical consulting before he came here to Haas. And when he was here at Haas, he founded a company which he'll be speaking about called Aurora Biofuels with a couple of other people from Berkeley. One was an engineer and MBA student called Guido Radelli, if I got
correct.
It right.
Yep.
Yeah. And another, Bert Vick, who was a PhD in biochemistry.
Yep.
Okay, and I got to meet both Guido and Bert while I worked for Aurora, which is great. So Aurora Biofuels is based in Alameda, and its focus is on producing biofuels from algae, which a number of you may have heard of is one of the new innovations that's coming up, because algae has some special properties, and there's a lot of hope that algae is going to be a very efficient a way of producing sustainable biofuels going forward. These three guys actually went into the business competition, the business plan competition a few years ago, and won a substantial amount of money to kickstart their firm. And for anyone who's lucky enough to visit Aurora down in Alameda will see the big check. It's still in the office there, so that was a great event. And Aurora has now grown to around 40 people or so. I was lucky enough to work there as an intern in the business developer area working for Matt. It's a very dynamic firm. It's full of technology type of people, like biologists and engineers and so forth. There's a couple of business types, but it's a lot of science heads and so forth. I guess now it's led after the founders handed over the reins to a fellow called Bob Walsh, who has a lot of experience in the oil and gas industry. He used to work for Shell. So a very dynamic firm. If any of you get the chance to work as an intern or full-time for Aurora, I would certainly recommend it. And it was good working for Matt too. It's a new experience working for an entrepreneur compared to more traditional bosses in traditional companies. So I'm sure that Matt will give you some very good insights into entrepreneurship. Encourage you to listen carefully and ask lots of hard questions. And make him squirm a bit, and I'm sure he'll do his best to answer them. So if you can all join me in welcoming Matt today, please.
Thanks, Roy. Yeah. Can you guys hear me okay? Yeah? I'll start here with the presentation. Just a quick introduction to Aurora. I think Lori's stolen a little of my thunder on the background, but I'll just go over that information that I have there. Talk about a little bit how I arrived here, my background, and what's led up to me standing in front of you today. My personal thoughts on how you start a venture-backed company, particularly more driven for MBA students, but I think it's pretty relevant for the engineers in the room, and Q&A. I think the presentation's relatively quick. Hopefully it'll give you some things to think about, and happy to spend most of the time answering questions. So as Lori mentioned, this company came out of Berkeley. Late 2005 was kind of when the idea for Aurora really started being worked on by myself in the MBA program. Guido, who Lori mentioned was a chemical engineer, he had spent 7 years prior to business school working for an engineering firm in Switzerland and had done large-scale plants around the world, things like ammonia plants. And the third founder, Bert Vick, was a PhD biochemistry in Robert Tijan's lab. So pretty different backgrounds. We did compete in the 2006 Berkeley Business Plan Competition right here. I guess that was probably the last time I was standing in front of this room. We won that, so that was a nice kickstart to the company. And as Lori mentioned, that did come with some capital to help us get off the ground. We then participated in another competition later that year, the Berkeley Intel Technology Challenge, and also won that one. So that's kind of the history with Berkeley. Since then, went on to raise $25 million in venture capital financing over two rounds of funding. We have three local venture capital firms that have backed us. The largest and most well-known is Oak Investment Partners, which is probably the largest venture fund out there. Lori mentioned 40 employees. I think we're up to about 60 now. Our headquarters is in Alameda, which is not far away. So if you're interested in visiting, shoot me an email and let me know. And we do have a pilot facility that we've been running for about 2 years in Florida. So this is my one quick slide. It has a lot on it to talk about what we actually do. We're creating biofuels from algae. And the input in terms of the energy in this process is coming from the sun. We also take carbon dioxide as a major input into this, and we feed this into a shallow pond that's filled with algae. Our ponds happen to be saltwater ponds because we're not interested in utilizing fresh water, which is better used for agriculture, and we do this on marginal land. So our site in Florida is on the ocean, and we feed in seawater. We grow our algae. We harvest it. The biomass that it produces has a lot of lipid or oil inside of it. The content is actually pretty similar to a soybean. You can extract out that oil and produce a biodiesel or biofuel. And the rest of the mass that's left over can be used for animal feed. So just to give you a very high-level idea of what we're up to, here's my slide. I'm not that interested in talking about Aurora and the technology as part of this presentation. I can talk about that for days if you want. This is more about the entrepreneurial process. If you do want to talk about Aurora and the technology and you're interested in algae, send me an email and we can chat. So how I arrived here, Lori gave you a bit of my background. I did do an MBA at Haas, finished in 2006. I worked as a management consultant to large pharma and biotech companies before that. I spent a little bit of time in finance. My background undergrad was in biochemistry. I think Lori also mentioned I'm the vice president of business development at Aurora now. I was also the founding CEO up until about 9 months ago when we brought in an experienced executive who'd been at Shell for the last quarter century, running a major part of Shell Europe. So kind of what I wanted to get out of Haas when I applied, the reason why I came here, I was interested in starting a company. That was my goal. I saw this as an opportunity to evaluate ideas. It takes a lot of work and maybe a bit of luck to find an idea that's worth spending all your time and energy on. I was interested in just generally studying entrepreneurship, learning more about how this was done, coming to Silicon Valley and seeing how it was kind of, this is the place to do it. Berkeley also has a lot of smart people. Most new technology companies, you need the brilliant engineers or the smart scientists. Berkeley's a good place to come and look for that. And there's a lot of potential investors around. So I saw this as a pretty interesting way to spend 2 years looking at opportunities. I was able to achieve the goal. I obviously started the company. I'd say it wasn't easy. Spent a lot of time evaluating a lot of different opportunities. I think your first years probably see that there's a lot going on. There's a lot of distractions. There's a lot of ways to get off the path. I was in these lectures in a slightly smaller room, but sat through a lot of the life as an entrepreneur talks, and there were a lot of students in there who seemed very interested in entrepreneurship. Very few actually went and started a company. The few that did from the beginning were very serious about it, and I think they've all actually been pretty successful. So, you know, the other jobs, the internships, the skiing, all the fun thing that's out there to do, you got to kind of weigh that versus do you really want to start a company? And if you do, you really have to take it pretty seriously. General thoughts on how to start a venture-backed company coming out of school here. One, I'd say evaluate yourself. Do you really have the right mindset to do a venture-backed company? Venture-backed companies tend to be around big ideas. You need to have a vision of where you're going to go and willing to do whatever it takes to get there. That's different than most companies. Venture-backed business is pretty different than a lifestyle type of company in terms of what the expectations are, what you're shooting for, what your goals are. People are willing to take a lot of risk because they want a huge return. It's not necessarily the safest environment. And you have to understand the rules of the game that you're getting into. How's it played? What do the investors expect? What's kind of the environment that you're working in? It's fast-paced. There's a lot of quick decisions. That's great for some people. Other people like something a lot more structured and maybe slow. Are you really 100% committed to doing this? Because if you're not, I don't think you'll get it done. Other people are 100% committed, and if you're making the decision to give someone capital, you're going to do it with the group that's willing to take the risk. I graduated from Berkeley with a little bit of money from the business plan competition, but a lot of debt and no assurance that I'd raise capital. So you need to be willing to take some risk. And look at your strengths and weaknesses. I mean, how are you going to add unique value to a team? give some real hard thought to what's unique about yourself. And I think you all have something you could offer to a team that's starting a venture-backed company, but give some real thought to your role and what position you should play. Once you've evaluated yourself and determined that this is something that you're serious about, you have to find a big opportunity, and that's a hard thing to do. My suggestion, and again, these are all just my ideas on how to do this, is to find something that interests you and also has a pretty good fit with your background. You're going to have to look at a lot of ideas that are probably the wrong idea. I mean, I looked at probably dozens of ideas. I met with lots of scientists. I met with lots of PhDs. Didn't find anything my whole first year of the MBA program. Went to work during the summer for another startup. A guy who I knew, who was a former VP at Genentech, was doing a biotech startup, and I went there. It was 10 or 15 people. It was fun, but it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to do something from scratch. I wanted it to be mine. And so I spent my second year not interviewing for jobs. I kept pushing and kept looking for the right ideas. I think when you find the right idea, you'll know it. And by that I mean, as you dig into most ideas, there's huge problems and the market's not big, or you'll find issues. As I dug into Aurora, the deeper I got, the more interesting it was. So I think those types of things start to play out. Some tips on finding a good place for an idea, a big opportunity. Pick a market that has good macro trends. By that I mean find something where kind of the wind's behind your sails. Energy is interesting. When we started looking at Aurora, oil was around $50 or $60 a barrel. Historically, it had always been at 20. That's a fundamental shift, and a lot of people were making the assumption it would stay high. That's a new reason to do this. Climate change, that was coming up. All these issues are obvious now. At the time, they were being debated, you know, as to if these were significant or not. But find a good market. It will make things much easier. Find an idea that can really scale to at least a $1 billion business. I mean, do you envision this thing? What would it look like? Could it be that big? You need to be convinced of that. If you're not, then potential investors won't be, and it's not worth for them investing. That's part of understanding the venture game, is that they need to go for very large companies. So if you're going to go for venture capital, you need to pitch a very big idea. This is a tough one. Figure out, you know, why you or your team, and why now? Why hasn't this been done before, if it's a $1 billion opportunity? What's so special about you? Those are questions you have to answer. You can look at VC portfolio companies, and you can look on their websites, and they list all the companies they invest in to get an idea on the types of companies they invest in. You may be a little too late to the game to try and copy something that's already been funded, but at least you can get a sense for the type of ideas that are big enough to get venture capital. And timing is important. I don't know exactly how you manage that, but you know, if you tried raising money 6 months ago, you probably wouldn't, no matter how great your idea or team. It was just a tough environment to raise capital. I think it's starting to flow again. It's probably a little more difficult than it was in the beginning of 2007 when we did this. There's a little luck to it, but be aware that the market and timing and what's going on is very important to your success and ability to raise capital. So the third thing, form the best team possible. The founding team of the company really is critical. Try and create a balanced team with complementary skill sets. I mentioned our founding team. We're all very different. We bring different things to the table. I was kind of the management consultant, business guy. Guido was in the MBA program, but he's a very strong engineer. He managed large engineering teams. And Bert understands the biology and the science. So you don't want a team of four MBAs. You don't want a team of four engineers. Agree on the roles and responsibilities. This is important. I've mentored a few teams for business plan competitions, and after one meeting basically killed the company, because I told them someone needs to be the CEO. You got to figure out, are you all committed to this or not? You're just going to waste each other's time. So find out if you're serious. Put it in writing. Incorporate, if nothing else, to get it done. We all put a little money in. I mean, show you're serious. Find ways to make sure that your team's serious. You know, if I'm going to start this company and go and do it, are you with me or not? You got to get commitment. In terms of forming the best team, add advisors. Ask people for help. I mean, you're at Berkeley. There's, you know, world-class professors here, And you need to be able to show people that you can build a team. It doesn't cost any money. You don't need any money in the bank account to go sign up advisors and show that you've got some people committed to you. And that's something that's pretty important. We basically created dream lists of people we wanted involved with our company, and we basically got them. It's pretty amazing. You need to go out there and network and convince people that you're serious about it, and you're willing to do this, and you're going to put all your effort into it, and they'll help. So just go ask for help, and you'd be surprised how many people will help you. You have to create a very simple story when you're raising capital. So you've found your big idea. You've got your interesting team. Tell me why I should invest in 10 slides. And that's kind of the heart of what you're out there doing in order to raise money. For me, kind of the key elements of a pitch is what's the problem you're solving, and it's got to be a big one, going back to, you know, a $1 billion opportunity. What's your solution? And that's where the technology probably plays in if you develop some new technology. Talk about the team. Talk about the amount of money you need and what you're going to achieve with it. It's pretty simple. It's actually not that complicated, but it's tough to answer these questions well and to put this together. And one kind of tip would be practice question and answer. Your pitch just gets your idea across. We spent a lot of time drilling each other between the founding team on answering questions. Answer it concise, get to the point. You know, what is the person really asking? And by the time we got into real venture capital meetings, we'd done enough business plan competitions and practiced enough, there really wasn't a question we hadn't heard. And we had thought about the answers to these. So, you know, it's just practice. And you've got a lot of ways to hone and improve the pitch here at Berkeley. Through the business plan competition, through the professors that are here, through the classes that are here in entrepreneurship, and from alumni. Again, people are willing to help. So ask for it, and you can get the feedback. Once you've got this simple story, you got to go out there and sell it. That's what you're selling. I mean, we basically sold an idea on paper and three of us, and we raised $5 million in our first round of funding. That's pretty unique. There's not a lot of places in the world where you can do that. You're in Silicon Valley. There's all the money you'd ever need right here. They're willing to take risk. Our investors are all entrepreneurs who started companies at a very early age and were very successful. It can be done by guys like you. You need to network. It's very easy to get a venture capital meeting. If you're coming out of Berkeley and you've found the big opportunities and you've got a good story and you've got some good advisors and you've got a good team, you'll get as many meetings as you want. It's not that difficult. But expect it to take some time. Unless you've got something amazingly unique, people are jumping all over you, which is unlikely, it's going to take time. You need to go talk to dozens of venture capital firms. We were up and down Sand Hill Road. People want to do due diligence on you. They want to ask questions. They want you to prepare material for them. It's a lot of work. It's long hours. You don't know if a deal is going to come together or not. And you usually need to form a syndicate, meaning that not one venture capital fund is going to say, great, I like you, I'm in, the deal's done. You probably need to convince two or three. We had three. So you got to spend enough time going out there to get people interested. And there's a lot of external reasons why people will say no to you. So getting past those reasons and getting them convinced that you should be there, you know, one or two investments they're going to be doing this year, that you're one of them, takes a lot of work. But you just got to go out there and talk to people. And lawyers get involved at the end. So this whole process takes 6 months, could take a year. You know, and that's the question. Are you committed enough to an idea to go spend the time and the effort to go do it? I think it's well worth it. I actually think the risk is actually pretty low. Most of you guys probably won't have a hard time going and getting a job if you try doing something entrepreneurial and it failed. That was kind of my mentality, and I knew I wanted to do it and try it. So if you're sitting here and you came to Berkeley to try and do something entrepreneurial, just go do it. It's really not that big of a risk to give it a try. So just some other random final thoughts, kind of last slide. Raise more money than you think you need. Things cost more and take longer. Money can solve problems. You're in a better negotiating position for your next round. We've got some great entrepreneurs involved in our company, and the ones that have been successful multiple times every time tend to follow this and raise as much cash as they can. You need to manage your investors. I like to over-deliver. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that oversell and then get themselves in trouble when they don't deliver to their investors. You don't want to have surprises at your board meetings. You want to inform your investors, keep them up to date on what's going on, good and bad. And I've been very surprised how understanding people are. They expect you to hit problems. They expect you to hit hurdles. The question is, do you have the team to get by those hurdles and over them? And do you create value in doing that? And if you do, it's fine if there's a problem. I look at problems as usually good things. And you have to make decisions that result in the biggest pie. And that's part of understanding the game that you're in, is you're trying to make the stock as valuable as possible. For us, it was hiring in a new CEO. So hiring in my boss at the right time, after I'd raised $25 million and we had a solid team and we had a lot of validation, we said, we're going to need to go raise a lot more. We're going to need to do a large infrastructure project build outs. I don't know anything about this. So at the right time, you need to be willing to do those types of things. And kind of the way I look at it is, our product in the short term, what we're selling, is stock. You know, longer term, we'll have another product. So figure out what people value. If people value an experienced CEO at the head of the company, then recognize that. So that's just one example. But you know, regularly we make decisions based on, you know, does this increase the value, or what increased the value the most? So that's my quick presentation, and open it up for questions.
So how did your background in management consulting help you as an entrepreneur?
I think it's actually pretty relevant. There's a lot of information out there that you have to gather and synthesize. In our project, there's 20 different ways you could go about creating biofuels from algae. There's all different systems you can grow algae in. There's all different types of organisms you can grow. There's many different ways to go about it. So I think taking in all this information that's out there, synthesizing it quickly, and then making a decision as to which path makes the most sense, and then being able to communicate that to people is a skill that you learn as a consultant. When we go out and pitch investors, all I did for 3 years was make PowerPoint presentations. I made this in 15 minutes this afternoon. So you get that skill of being able to put it together quickly and go pitch it. I think that's pretty important.
I'm just curious as to what things do you think about when you're trying to form your founding team? Were there some, what are the considerations that you thought about when you picked a team member, and what were some hurdles that you guys came across and how you accomplished them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I wanted really smart people. I wanted the smartest people I could find, and I wanted people that I felt I could work with for a long period of time. Those were, to me, the most important attributes. And I wanted people that had different skill sets than me. So Bert and Guido are both brilliant. They're some of the smartest people I ever met. And I had worked with Bert on a project in an opportunity recognition class. It had nothing to do with what led to Aurora, but I respected him, thought, you know, he kind of got it. He understood the business issues more than most of the PhDs I had met. Was a very smart guy. And Guido the same way. So I think, you know, you need to have the right fit and see that you could really work with people and respect them. And, you know, most of the successful companies I've come across, it's all about hiring the best people you can at any point in time. And for me, starting Aurora, the best people I could find at that point in time was people around me at Berkeley who had good backgrounds who I could work with. And Bert, although he has a PhD in biochemistry, had never done anything in algae specifically. So it wasn't like we developed Bert's technology. And it worked out fine. And actually, investors, some of them at least, are totally fine with that approach. They want to make sure you have the right team to solve the problems you're going to come up against. And I think smart people are more likely to solve hard problems. Yeah, so when we started the company, a lot of money was going into traditional first-generation biofuels, so taking corn and refining it to ethanol, and smart VCs were funding ethanol plants, and they were doing the same thing with biodiesel. You take soy oil, you stick it through a conventional plant, and out comes biodiesel. These plants, this technology has been around forever. There's nothing new, really, or innovative about it. And we were actually pretty surprised that venture capital was going into those kind of plants, because again, you need huge returns from venture capital. And it didn't really make sense to us that these smart investors were putting their money into these plants. We actually kind of thought it was crazy. We looked at it and said, well, the problem in biofuels is the feedstock. What are you going to create the biofuel from? You need some starting point. And corn and soy is not a very logical starting point for a bunch of reasons. One, it just doesn't scale. Two is it's a food crop, and we use it for other purposes. So those things didn't make a lot of sense, and we came across algae. And it wasn't a new idea. It's actually an idea that's been around for decades. It's been studied by the U.S. government. But there had been some major shifts, and the big driver for all of this is the price of oil. And there'd been a lot of work that had gone on the biotechnology side of algae that we thought was interesting and unique and could be applied to algae in ways that hadn't ever been applied before. And those kind of factors were coming together that made this the right time to do this. And it also helped that algae had been this obscure field that not a lot of effort had gone into. There's not a lot of algae specialists out there in the world. So it was ripe for innovation. It was ripe for entrepreneurs to come in and spend a lot of money and put a lot of smart people on the problem. So that's a little bit about why.
I want to ask you how you knew that you had the right idea. And you were talking about evaluating a number of opportunities and rejecting a lot before you found the right one. Mm-hmm. So I guess how far down the path did you go with this idea? Was there a certain milestone, like we won the business plan competition or we raised our first round of financing, or is it just that this idea never hit a dead end and so that's what made it the right idea?
Yeah, on this idea, I very clearly remember that when we were participating in the competition, which goes on for a while through the different rounds, I knew that there was enough there to go do a real company and go and try and raise money. And win or lose, I didn't really care in terms of whether I was going to do the company. I wanted to win as a marketing event for the company. But if we would have lost, we still would have gone forward with Aurora. How did I know that? I don't know. I guess it just came from looking at a lot of ideas. I mean, many ideas are too small. Many potential teammates you don't really want to work with. So there's a lot of reasons that kill ideas. It's tough to find the right one, but if you go through that process and talk to people. I mean, I was meeting with venture capitalists. I was talking with people. I was taking all the entrepreneurship classes here. I was looking at a lot of opportunities. I was talking to the licensing office about what technologies were out there. And you start to kind of get a feel for what looks interesting and what doesn't. And I guess as we started to work on Aurora and put our ideas down on paper, which we needed to do for the business plan competition, that it was gelling enough and felt good enough to go try it. I didn't know if I'd be able to raise money or not, but I knew it was good enough to go try.
I'd like to thank Matt for coming and see everybody next week.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.